This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement, where we're reflecting on a past week in which Fulham made it 20 goals in 5 consecutive victories. Their 7-0 win at Blackburn Rovers was their biggest ever away from home. In Sky Bet League One, just 3 points now separate the top 4. And in Sky Bet League Two, it's all change on the managerial front. It's the official EFL podcast. A major new English football record was set over the past week when the Middlesbrough manager Neil Warnock joined us on the first episode of the official EFL podcast last season. It was to celebrate his 40th year in the dugout. Now, after his current team's midweek trip to Kenilworth Road, he's recorded 1,602 games as a league manager, beating Dario Gradi's previous record. And just to set this in context, Sir Alex Ferguson managed 1,503, Brian Clough managed 1,451, and Harry Redknapp 1,434. Let's talk to two men who witnessed at first hand part of Neil Warnock's journey. Michael Brown played under him at Sheffield United and Leeds United, and from, we suspect, a rather different perspective, Mark Halsey was a Football League, then Premier League referee from the mid-90s until 2013. When I say his name, Brownie, what do you... That's Neil Warnock, not Mark Halsey. When I say Neil Warnock's name, what do you think?
Yeah, we can leave that for in a minute, can't we?
Here we go. Here's another one for Kerry. There we go.
There's the yellow card.
When you say it, Clem, it makes me giggle. It makes me smile because... So I joined Sheffield United. I was thinking, what type of club am I going to? What type of manager? You could see he's quite irate. He, obviously, at the front of the dugout, this persona, this angry man at times who shouts and fights for every ball, every decision. But actually, when we got to know him, and I feel like over the first time I was with him, over those 4 years, as things started to get better for Sheffield United, I felt like he started to relax, he started to understand him more. He'd still have, obviously, that spark, that madness on the touchline where he goes and the red mist comes. But actually, he knows exactly what he's doing. He's cultured, he's clever. And he knows when and when not to put the pressure on. He knows what to say, when to say it, and how he wants to do it, whether that's rightly or wrongly. And I think early on, not many people give him that sort of credit of understanding the situation, when to put the pressure on, etc. But I tell you what we did, Clem. We had a group at Sheffield United under Neil, and I think that was the first time he realised it was about enjoyment. And in that group, we had good days off, we had a laugh every day in training, encouraged the group to do it. And I've got to say, it was one of the best times of my career, that Sheffield United dressing room. It was an amazing day. We rushed in every morning to get there. He just let us get on with it, let us laugh, let us joke. And then after games, when you lost it, he'd go crazy, as you can imagine. And you're like, oh, here he goes. And don't say anything back and wait. And by about Tuesday, Wednesday, when we seen him, he'd come round again, ready for the next game. But wonderful career, great guy. And to still be going, he's quit 15 times already, hasn't he? And he's just carried on.
So that's the perspective of somebody who saw him sort of every day-ish, you know, 5 days a week. What about somebody who might see him, Mark, I don't know, every couple of months and just have that sort of whirlwind between 2 and 5:30? Well, probably 4:15, because he'd like to knock on your door as soon as he came off the pitch, didn't he? Not wait the requisite half an hour.
Yeah, I'd many times really got to knock on my door at half-time and full-time. listen, Neil's a great character. I've worked with him, I've refereed his teams many, many times. You know, I love refereeing his teams because you know what you're going to get from Neil. And I've also worked with him with BT, and we built up such a great relationship off the field when I was working for BT. He's an absolutely top man. So, as I say, you know, we need people like him in the game. He's passionate. You know, he just loves the game of football. And I think with us referees, I don't think they show enough empathy. We've got to understand managers' frustrations and the emotions they go through, because at the end of the day, some of our decisions cost managers ultimately their job. I remember refereeing his teams. There was a game at Bramall Lane. It was, I think it was the season when Reading and Sheffield United were going for promotion to the Premier League. I remember Sheffield United being 1-0 up. And with about a minute to go, less than a minute, and Paddy, you know, as we know Paddy, know Paddy very well, still speak with him today, come hearing out of his box, took the Reading forward out. I've given a penalty. Neil wasn't best pleased. Paddy knew it was a penalty, and Neil's come running down the touchline to berate me, and I've just turned around and looked at him and started walking towards him, immediately done a U-turn and run straight down the tunnel. So after the game, he knocks on my door. He says, Mark, I said, come in, Neil. He said, Mark, did you send me off? I says, no, you chose to run down the tunnel yourself, Neil. I didn't do anything. So, you know, and there was another time where he knocks on my door after, I mean, it was a tough game. And he knocks on my door. He said, Mark, it's Neil. I said, Neil, get out. I do not want you coming in because we may both get into trouble. He said, I only want to come in and tell you what a good game I thought you had. I said, okay, Neil, when you come in, you come. Come and tell me what a good game I had. But, and there was another time with Neil down at Millwall. Tough game, Millwall Leeds. Sent one of his players off. He thought I should have given him a penalty. And after the game, I mean, I just come back from battling cancer. And all the Leeds players come up, well done, Mark. Great, great game. Shook my hand. No problem with the sending off. For it was violent conduct. And Neil's come hearing after me. Do not shake his hand. Do not shake his hand. He's had a terrible game, effing and jeffing at me. I mean, I was furious. If I was honest, I wanted to give him one. Yeah, you know how you feel in that moment of time. I was absolutely furious. And I got into my dressing room, and the steward stood outside my door. I said, under no circumstances, do not let Neil Warnock in my dressing room. And the steward said to me, do you know what, Mark? Thanks for that. I will not let him in your dressing room. I will not let him in your dressing room. And he didn't. And with that, I phoned up the FA. I was absolutely furious. And on Tuesday, he got a £2,000 fine for his actions. So when we worked at BT together, he kept saying, Mark, why did you get me a fine? Why was I fined £2,000 on that game?
Wow. I mean, do you think, Michael, there was any aspect of gamesmanship about what he did? Or was it pure, genuine, 100% emotional anger that we were seeing there?
I think there's a bit of both. When you look at Neil, like I said, he knows what he's doing. He knows when he needs to probably get a reaction from somebody, put a little bit of pressure on. He just wanted to win all the time. He had that hunger, that desire to do so. So it was... we used to laugh, obviously, when he'd lose it type thing. And in the dressing room, and he'd be there waiting for a reaction. We'd all be giggling, thinking, here he goes again, he's going to go for somebody. There'd be always somebody have that reaction. And on the side of the pitch, just literally, when he used to go after people and after different opponents. And he did calm down a lot. You know, I seen a huge difference when he came to Leeds United. Hunger, but he was a different person. He was more cool. He didn't have to prove it anymore. He wasn't sort of on the way up. He'd already arrived to where he wanted to be, and then he was just now managing because he wanted to type thing, you know, where before I felt like he was trying to prove his career, get to the Premier League. And recently we'd done something for him on the EFL Quest Show for another milestone he'd had, and he just keeps getting them, but he was on good form. And I'd always say, I'm always a real pro Neil Warnock because of how he helped me sort of get my career back from a Manchester City day where you go Premier League back to Championship and then you needed to develop to go again, and off I went to Spurs. But he's got some unbelievable stories, hasn't he? And one thing he's always good at is the boardroom, advising other people in and around the different clubs. And I think he's always wanted to go and get on and be welcome to do the job, which not many can say. And no wonder the amount of games he's done.
Well, I want to ask you, because Mark sort of outlined how his sheer professionalism was not going to let something like Mark's illness get in the way of him being himself. But actually, if one of the players had a big problem, did he have that softer side as well? Did you know you could go to him and he would help you if you really were struggling with some sort of family issue?
I think the one thing he would always say straight away, family come first. And it was, I think the one thing I'd always say to you, Neil has two phones. He always had two phones. One for everyone, and he'd carry them along, all with all his ages. Not like that, simply. But literally, and one thing he always did, and he taught everyone early, is he'd get back to everybody. Do you know, the agents, different people looking to do things in football. Imagine their phones light up. So he had a second one, but we'd always be taking, we'd always be in the middle of sort of set pieces or something, and one of the phone goes, stop, 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 stop. Mrs. Warnock, straight on the phone. So he takes it in the middle of training. That's family first. Family first. You've got to do that. So I think that's an example of saying when the family comes, Neil's the first to say, see you later, Monday off, Tuesday off, go and get sorted, go and do everything. And I think that just tells you everything with Neil. When she rings, he answers wherever he is. He's there. I thought that was just an example of how he puts the family first, you know?
I mean, I can vouch for Michael there because me and Neil still keep in contact today, you know, with texts and one or two phone calls. So if I text him or I ring him and miss call, he'll always get back to me. So, you know, I can vouch for Michael. He always does carry those phones, but he'll always get back to you. And as I say, we still speak today.
Yeah. Mark, can I just ask you, I mean, where he's sort of held with the refereeing fraternity, you know, if you put on one of his team's games, you know the sort of ride. Did you see some of the guys, though, crumble? Did some of them have to be coached to be able to deal with him?
I think I can only speak for myself in those situations. And I always relished Neil, you know, refereeing Neil's teams, because you knew you had to be at your best. You knew you couldn't make an error because you knew he'd be on to the fourth official.
Is that because he'd make it public, though, as well, Mark?
Yeah, is that part of it?
So, one, you can sort of take it as he's going to be on you permanently, but then do you realise that he's going to make you into a focal point to everybody? Does that make you change?
Yeah, I think sometimes he will take that pressure off the players and put it onto the officials. And I think what Neil tries to do, even when he brings the team sheets in and when he comes and, you know, perhaps he tries, and you know what he's like down the tunnel. He's in your ear down that tunnel so no one can see. He's having a go at you in your ear going down the tunnel. So I think he tries to play those mind games. He tries to get into your head. And I think Neil Warnock knows a weak referee and a strong referee.
Do you know what we should just point out? I mean, obviously, he started at Gainsborough Trinity, then Burton Albion, then he brought Scarborough into the league, of course, and that was his first league game, because this we're talking about his league, his games as a league manager, and then Notts County, Huddersfield, Plymouth, Oldham, Bury, Sheffield United, Crystal Palace, QPR, Leeds, back to Crystal Palace, back to QPR, Rotherham, Cardiff, Middlesbrough. I tell you what, not in a million years could anybody get close to the path that he's been on, Brownie, if they were to start off. Now, you know how tough it was when you had a go at it at Port Vale.
Yeah, it's amazing. When you look at the starter point. So like I said to you, as he's working his way up, he'd seen how hard it was as a player finishing off, realising the different angles of what he'd been through, and then to go to Scarborough, etc. And that's one place I think he really learnt a lot, because it was always where he'd take us. We'd always have to go to Scarborough, we'd have to go to the beach, we'd have to go across the bay, we'd go and have a night out at Scarborough. And the lads, you're getting new lads coming in, go, so where are we off then? We go to Scarborough. They're like, Scarborough? Of all places, that's where we're going. And we'd be straight on the beach, down the amusements, having a drink, having a night out together. Gaffer comes with us and everything, you know. So it's, you know, he's learned is a different way. I think he's also later on in his career, which I never was sure that he would do, is to adapt to more of this modern day style, because he was stuck in many ways, and he still is. He's got those traits in every way now. Even at Cardiff, for instance, his pre-season routines that other teams don't do. He takes the pre-season of these particular laps. He has his whistle. He knows his clipboard. And a lot of these things you'd never do. And the sports scientists are looking, going, what is this? You get different physios. But he has adapted a lot more than you said he would have. And that's ultimately why he's been able to do it. And I think once he got to that Premier League, Sheffield United, etc., he learned to think, well, I've enjoyed it. I've had a good time. And I think he's mellowed a lot. It's hard to say that, isn't it? There's a decision went against Middlesbrough the other week, and there was a sending off, and I was thinking it's never a sending off, and they got it given back, didn't they? And literally, I was just feeling for the referee, thinking good luck wherever you are.
I remember the game, Brownie. You're right, it wasn't a sending off, but it makes me laugh how he always sends his teams, or he takes his teams now to Cornwall for pre-season where he lives.
Of course,
I've got so many stories. We honestly. Cornwall. Brilliant.
Listen, the one team he managed was when he was appointed the QPR manager was heaven to me, because being a big QPR fan, I never got to referee him when he was at QPR. But yes, get in there.
So you had a reprieval. But the trips to Cornwall, I mean, literally, he, all the pre-season games were there, so he's networked for everything. Yeah. The painter got to come, the plumber, he boxed off everything. All the local pubs, we'd go and have a few pints there, we'd have a barbecue, an amazing house. He'd done the local course, would look after his golf hole at his house, because he'd all go there. Yeah. I mean, literally, he's clever, but he's brilliant. He's really enjoyed it down there. And then he obviously moved... His wife was ill and then went to Cardiff and spent a lot of time there, which it was hard for him, what you're thinking, to move there actually away from Cornwall to spend time. Mm. And he obviously had a second, third, fourth bite at the cherry, and for it to be still going, I mean, all of a sudden there was pressure on, wasn't there, at Middlesbrough, and they get a great run of results. And it's just an amazing desire to keep getting up to Earth, isn't it?
The one thing we haven't discussed, Brownie, is obviously the Battle of Bramall Lane. I'm referring to the famous game in March 2002, the West Brom game.
I've not discussed that for about 10 minutes. It's quite nice.
It's part of this story here. I mean, of all the moments in football, it's the only game that in the history of English football ever to be abandoned due to a shortage of players. I mean, as moments in the history of football go, for you and Neil Warnock to have been involved in that, that must have been extraordinary, wasn't it?
Do you know what, Clem? You don't actually realise the outcome when you were in it, if that makes sense, of where it's going to go. And everybody, when you're finishing the game, you're in the second. I mean, we've had anniversary after anniversary. I've been on, as you said, BT and Sky, and done several things regarding the Battle of Bramall Lane and discussing it into great depth of how and what and why it happened, over tackles and revenge and things. And it's, again, it's another thing in my career where you learn with adversity and different things are coming your way to deal with. And Neil, obviously, the same as well. Gary Megson throwing a lot of things around. No love lost between those two, which was quite obvious. But to be involved, it's an amazing story, which I don't think anybody's proud of, to actually have that record to be the only game ever to be stopped because of those reasons. Yes, there was injuries towards the end, some freak decisions by players actually to put the referee under that sort of pressure. And by the way, he handled it, and I see him all the time now actually, we have a bit of a giggle about it, and he handled it impeccably actually. He could have sent off, honestly, I could have got sent off twice in the game, literally, because it just went that bad. Honestly, if Mark had been there, Mark could have just come and give us a right hook and said, play on. Yeah. I mean, the supporters must be thinking they want a little bit of that in some of the games, for sure. But, no, it's a real strange one. Injuries. And then, do you know what was iconic? You thought... They were thinking we wanted to stop the game to actually play it again, you know, to actually lose this, go less than seven, replay it again, because so they have beat us. But we were like mid-table toward the end of the season. We were like done. And actually, when you got in the dressing room, it was just like, whoa, weird. That's the strangest game I've ever been involved in. And then you got ready and you walked across the car park, and then you realised there was journalists running from everywhere towards the stadium, across the car park. And at that point, you start to realise the outcome, the investigations, and then here we are now, many, many years later, still talking about it.
Did Neil do well to steer through those waters? Because he was obviously inextricably at the heart of that. I mean, it just goes to show the resilience of the man, the political ability to work his way nearly 20 years after that to still be in the thick of the game.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember that game Brownie's talking about very well, because at our meeting, we dissected that game. We went through that game because something like that had never happened. And you've got a United fan as a manager, and you've got a Wednesday fan as a manager.
They're probably still using that now, aren't they?
I would imagine so, yeah. But I think, if you look at Neil, I think, you look back at his career and all the things he's done, and some of the things about Neil, you cannot condone. But what you can say is that Neil is a person that is needed in football. I think he's a tremendous man, tremendous knowledge of the game, and he's a what would you say, Michael? He's a lovable rogue of football.
Yeah, I think he was. I think he was a little bit like that early on, if that makes sense. Yeah. Do you know, like, yeah. And then he did have a change.
But football needs Neil Warnock.
Well, and I think it would be a fitting final record to set as well. At the moment, he's level on seven league promotions with Graham Taylor and Dave Bassett. I think the best thing he can possibly do is get another record on the board and take Middlesbrough back into the Premier League. Yeah. No self-interest involved there at all. I mean, purely from a completely dispassionate point of view. Right, I want to finish almost like I started. I want one sentence to describe his achievement. I'll start with you, Brownie.
When you mentioned Neil Warnock and you mentioned a sentence, I think we could go on all day, couldn't we? I think that's the that's the single point. I've got so many funny stories. It's ridiculous on Neil. That would make you laugh and make you think, what's he really done? His wife sleeping on sleeping and thinking someone else is going to score, Paul Pesci-Salido, so he changed the team on the morning. So I think he's got a little bit of everything. I think he's been unbelievably entertaining to so many football clubs for the passion. Yeah. And I think the supporters overall have loved him, hated him, would like to take him. And for him to be still going at the age he's at, and he's been through some problems family-wise as well, and to still have that hunger and desire, you've got to take your hat off, and fully deserved. And I think it's a wonderful achievement, and it's fantastic that we're talking about him in this sort of tone.
Oh, well, that's a wonderful tribute. Anything to add, Mark?
Yeah, listen, I think Neil, what he's given to football is second to none. And I think he's a remarkable person, a remarkable, you know, family man. And we know he's gone through problems with his wife, the same as my family with battling cancer. I think Neil is one of the true legends of football. I really do. I think he's a true legend of football and a remarkable man.
Let's leave it there. Thanks for sharing, and well done the two of you for surviving your time alongside it, particularly you, Mark, obviously.
Brady, good to see you, pal.
Cheers, guys. Thanks a lot.
The official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Well, he might have set that magnificent new record, but the game in which he did it wasn't Neil Warnock's finest hour in management, as Middlesbrough went from 1-0 up at Luton Town in the 57th minute to 3-1 down by the 62nd. True to form, the manager blamed the officials. Elsewhere in the Sky Bet Championship, the Barnsley manager Marcus Schott paid the price for just one league win in the club's first 15 games and losing his last seven. His final defeat in charge coming at Ashton Gate, where Bristol City supporters were celebrating their first win in 17 matches, a run in BS3 that goes back to January. Meanwhile, typifying everything we love about the division, after making the best start in Championship history, Bournemouth surrendered the EFL's last unbeaten record at home to Preston North End, who were previously without an away win. Into Sky Bet League One. I was looking through our next guest's long career in football since 1999, and the furthest south he'd been based until 2 years ago was Milton Keynes. Now, though, he is rapidly becoming the Southwest's most famous son since Paul Dark. It's a BBC One Sunday night drama for the uninitiated. Ryan Lowe has already achieved one promotion with Plymouth Argyle and is now openly embracing supporters' ambitions for a return to the Sky Bet Championship for the first time since 2010. Have you surprised yourself, Ryan, with how much you've enjoyed working down south?
Thanks for having me, lads, first and foremost. Surprised myself a little bit, yeah, because as you just mentioned there before about being at MK Dons for 12 months, and you know, I was a little bit homesick and you know, wanted to get back up the road. That the kids were younger then, but my lad's 15 now, my little girl's 13, which is a bit different. It's easier with the missus, I must say. But no, obviously, listen, you know, it's a great place to live, it's a great place to work. But it's more enjoyment in working for the football club, Clem, which is the biggest thing, because it's a fantastic, well-run football club, fantastically supported. At the moment, the football's going okay too.
Yeah, but you've got, obviously, say the North West, where a lot of your work activity's been. Obviously, there's a hell of a lot going on, not just other football clubs, but big urban conurbations, busy lives. The South West is a very different place culturally, isn't it? Very different place for you to adjust to.
Well, it's very different from Liverpool, the suburbs of Liverpool, let me tell you, yeah. But no, it's lovely and quiet down there. As you know, you can venture off down the South West and to places like St. Ives and Padstow, but ultimately, mate, we're there to work. I'm there to work. As I said before about the football club, yeah, it's a lot calmer and quieter than it is normally in Liverpool or the North West, as we said. But no, as I say, mate, it's going well. It's a nice place to be working and really enjoying it.
Yeah. Is it good then that you can almost, not good that you have to leave the family for a few days, but you can go down, work intensively, you can work from 7 in the morning till 11 at night, whatever, and then when you go back home, well, I was going to say you can spend time with the family, but just before we started this, you told me you're at home now. You've been to talk to Liverpool's under 21s today, 23s or something?
23s, yeah.
So you've hardly been with the family today, mate, have you? You just got football coursing through your veins.
Well, I've done the school run this morning, which is always a bonus for the kids. They love it. They don't get the bus or they don't walk when dad's home because I say, I'll take you, you can have a lie in. But in terms of that, you know, with the geography, with it, Clem, it's, you know, I get home every weekend. So win, lose or draw, or come home or away and get away from the celebrations or the madness or the disappointment, whatever it is, because that's my time to chill with the family. And I have Sundays religiously with them. When there's no games through the week, I have Mondays. And you know what, mate, you have to mix it up. Yeah, when I'm down with them, I spend some time with them as much as I can. You know, they come down, my lad comes to some away games and home games now with his friends, and you know, the missus and my little girl's the same. So I have to mix and match it. But as you say, mate, I don't work 7 till 11 because I'm not paid enough for them hours. But as you said, you can definitely get the hours in and get your work done. And then, you know, out of it, you don't have to come home, you don't have to entertain and, you know, look after everyone. The family are quite happy and content in Liverpool, and I'm quite happy and content doing my job down in Plymouth.
Now, listen, what's going on? Because obviously you're in just amazing form since losing on the opening day of the season. 9 wins in an unbeaten 15, going brilliantly well on the field. And also, the club had its sort of declaration of accounts early, small profit even through COVID, some astonishing figures as well. You know, 5,000 season tickets for last season were bought despite fans not being able to go there. You know, just in contrast to the rest of football, quite brilliant. So what's going on there? Is this a meeting of minds with you and the owner, Simon Haller?
Yeah, certainly. It's not just me and Simon. It's Andrew Parkinson, my CEO, and everyone associated with the board and all the football stuff. I think the good thing with the football club, Clem, is, you know, the football people above do their stuff and the business and as you said, the accounts, and the football people below in terms of me and my staff do the football. As I said, the chairman come in and backed it and put money in the COVID and the pandemic, which was great. He has said he's not putting no more money in, but I'm sure the club can survive. We had 16,000 there against Ipswich on Saturday, which is a massive occasion for anyone down Plymouth. I think it was 13 years since they had something like that. And as I say, mate, look, the football, the style, the philosophy, I think that's why we're getting 16,000 in. They're enjoying it down there. The place is bouncing at the moment. But we obviously have to reassure that, you know, it's not finished anytime soon. We've still got another, I don't know, is it 30 games to go or 28 games to go? And, you know, we've got to be consolidated where we are and stay in the top half if we possibly can and keep performing. The football finances and everything else, we've got a great board of directors and we've got a great football club that's getting run properly. So, you know, as you said, everyone's mirroring each other. We all have a big part to play in trying to bring the good times back to Plymouth Argyle.
But you used the phrase, we are on course to become a sustainable championship club. And I found the word sustainable quite unusual for a football manager to use. Had you been briefed or something, or was it hot in your head that the accounts were coming out? Or what? Where did the word come from?
It came from the chairman, Simon Alley. You know, when I first met him and he gave me the job and, you know, obviously he put money into the club and he said, look, you know, I can't, you know, carry on forever in a day to keep putting money in. I'll sustain it and keep it right. And to, you know, in certain, like a pandemic, no one knew that was going to come. So he's obviously backed it. But his ambition is to make sure the football club's a sustainable championship football club. And it's known for one of the best sporting organisations down the southwest. And as you've said, we are on course with his monies he's put in and with me at the helm and my coaching staff in terms of the football philosophy. It's obviously, you know, we're trying to get where we're going to get to. Listen, we've got a 5-year plan. This is our third year, going into our third year. So I'd like to think within 5 years, we can certainly do that, Clem.
Yeah. Where did this management bug come from? What was the sort of, what was your entry point, your interest? Because I'm not sure when I used to come and do features on you for your sort of 9-goal scoring run at Bury, was it? You were asked when you did that. You were, and then obviously, didn't we do loads of features, you know, the oldest man ever in football, you know, since Noah and his Ark and all that stuff. I'm not sure I would have thought at that point that you would go into management, but were you always planning it?
I was. I had a plan. Obviously, the later you get and not your coaching badges you do, I had a plan when I was 39. I had a 5-year plan. Was when I was finishing, was to go and be a coach, a first team coach, then assistant manager, and then have a chance in management. That come to fruition in 6 months, I think it was. Clem, obviously, I was development coach at Bury when Lee Clark lost his job. I took the games for six games, and then I think we won two, drawn two, lost two, and then he brought Chris Lacetti in. He had 10 games, and then the chairman come to me and said, "Right, I'm moving the manager on again. I want to make a little change, and you can bring someone else in with you and your style, put your stamp on it." And we done that. Brought Stephen Schumacher in with me and Rob Kelly the following season. We had a great start. We done okay. Rob left to go with his mate UA Rossler to Swedish club. I forget what club it was now, which was fine again. And yeah. You know, me and Stephen Schumacher, all the
I'm not going
to
guess.
It'll come to me in a minute. Anyway, yeah. And then mates, we bounced right into it. We had the style, I had the philosophy, what I wanted to do. You know, Shuey was an ex-attacker midfielder. I was a striker, and we wanted to have a brand of football that was exciting and the fans. And as you say, mate, it come to fruition in 6 months. And you know, our first year, we were obviously successful. And then obviously the bad things happened at Bury, and we had to move on straight away. And since that, you know, the first year we got Plymouth Argyle back into League One, where they certainly belong. We consolidated last year in a pandemic, which was tough for everyone. And a lot of football clubs, all the football clubs survived, more or less, which was good to see. And then we just keep revolving, mate. We just keep learning. We're doing okay at the moment. But, you know, nothing's won in November, is it? You know, or December, January, it's won at the end of the season. And all we've got to do is keep learning our trades, keep putting sessions on for the boys and watching the opposition. And as you know, Clem, if you're thereabouts come February, March, then you've got a hell of a chance of doing something great.
I wonder how much your own, let's be honest, pretty early in your career success has then given you the confidence to do it your way. You know, you get a promotion in your first full season, you then go to the other end of the country and you do exactly the same again. That's like a mark of approbation, isn't it? It's a kind of, you feel good about yourself and you have more confidence, I guess, to go and do it your way.
Clem, I must say this though, and I'll openly say it on record, because there's a lot of fantastic young coaches out there and a lot of fantastic managers. And the problem you have, you don't get left to do the jobs. There's always someone in the rear saying, do this, do that. You shouldn't have done this, you shouldn't have done that. And to an extent, I had a little bit of that Bury, but I managed to convince the chairman, look, just let us do our job. We're doing it. And the chairman at the time was an interested football, opinionated, put millions into the club and wanted an opinion and a say, which okay, is fine to an extent. And when I met Simon Allitt, he asked me a question is, if I asked you to do something, would you do it? And I said, well, depends what it was. And I said, of course, yeah, you're the chairman. And he said, right, let me rephrase it. If I asked you to play three up front when you only played two up front, what would you say? I said, I'd kindly say, I'd have a look at it in training, Mr. Chairman. He went, is that a polite way telling me to do one, basically? And I said, yeah. And it was the best thing, because I know now, up and down the country, there's a lot of managers and a lot of coaches, and someone's always in their ear to say, do this, do that, you shouldn't do it. And to be fair, even with our early success against in the Bury situation, you know, there was debates with the chairman, there was debates with the board, and he was questioning this and questioning that. I said, look, just let us do our job, because if you're going to sack me one day, sack me on me doing what I wanted to do. And it's been no different. But the good thing is, at Plymouth Argyle, we get left to look after the football operations and all the football situations ourselves. We have a great team behind the team. And all the directors and the board of directors and the secretary and CEO and chairman, they just back us 1,000,000%. And again, look, the success obviously will be pointed down to me and my staff, but success is breathed around the football club. You know, they're doing a fantastic job with the finances, as you've seen, with the sales, the ticket sales. First crowd sold out for many years. So, yeah, I think success builds from within. But if you've got people dictating and telling you what to do, it won't work. And I think that's proven. So I'm in a good place. We've got a good club, got a good owner, good board of directors who back us, and that's important as a manager.
And of course, League One has become a Scouse mini league, hasn't it? You've just beaten Paul Cook at the weekend. John Coleman's in there. I know you're good mates with Carl Robinson as well. There's a full Merseyside alumni going on, isn't there, in the third tier?
Do you know what, mate? There definitely is, yeah. We visit John Coleman Atkinson a week Saturday, I think, after the FA Cup. So it'd be nice to go and see Coley. And again, it just bodes well, doesn't it, for the sport, especially, you know, in Liverpool, there's a lot of good scouts, there's a lot of good coaches, you know. Cookie's got Franny Jeffers with him as a coach now, Ian Crane, Gary Roberts, he's got four scouts, I've only got one in Chewy. But again, you know, and John Coleman's doing a fantastic job, and Carl, along with Carl, and more the merrier, you know. We look at Anthony Barry, a close mate of ours, who's, you know, first team coach at Chelsea.
Brilliant.
Fantastic.
And
that's what I say about, you know, young up and coming coaches. You know, I've been in Liverpool this morning to do a talk with them, and, you know, some fantastic lads in there, some fantastic coaches, and it's great. You walk in, there's a lot of scousers around, and the way it should be, and I'm sure Everton will be the same. But, you know, I think there's a lot out there, coaches, managers, and certainly definitely players that come from the Liverpool area.
Yeah. Are you ambitious, Ryan? Are you really, really ambitious?
Yeah, I'm ambitious, Clem, but I'm realistic as well. I'm not, you know, I know that, you know, I always say you want to manage at the top, and I'm dead honest with you, I don't think many managers in the lower leagues will get an opportunity to go to the Premier League, however well they do. You know, I look at Dean Smith, you know, come from Walsall to Brentford to Aston Villa. You know, they're the type of, he's the type of person I'd love to, you know, be, and, you know, well, not be, but I'd love to follow in his footsteps of where he come. And, you know, Chris Wilder's another one, League One to the Championship, to the Premier League. You know, I think, you know, this now, at this day and age, you know, there's a lot of foreign managers, which is fine, and there's some good ones out there, but I think the English pyramid of coaches and the pro licence and the A licences, I think there's a lot of coaches out there that have all got the same ambition. My ambition is just to be the best I can be in certain areas, and do, you know, there's some of my staff do better things than me, and that's just the way it is. But you've got to be ambitious, you know, whether that's to try and win leagues, get promotions, or to manage in a top flight. And I don't think I'm any different to many more.
Great to talk to you. I've got to offer you congratulations as well. How long is it since you hung your boots up? About three and a half years now. You're looking pretty good, mate. Especially as you're in pasty land. You could have gone to seed, mate, couldn't you?
Well, I have gone to see it a little bit, my belly. I'm not going to lie, Clem, because we have a pasty every game, a ritual. It's a Devon ritual for Kevin Nansky, my first team coach. So we have a Ginster's pasty before every game.
Before or after the game?
But you said before. No, before. Only the staff, not the players.
Oh, I was about to say. We've just been talking about the people around and stuff. Your fitness coach would be horrified if everybody's tucking into an extra large Cornish special before a game.
No, the players are certainly not allowed them, not even through the week, not even after the game. But the staff, it's a good ritual that we have them, yeah.
Yeah, just make sure they've cooled down a bit. Chop the end, because if you have one of those molten hot, it can do you in for the rest of the afternoon, can't it?
You keep the crust round the sides, because they were for the colas, weren't they? The miners, used to eat them. Did you know that story?
I only learned
that when I went down to Cornwall.
Well, of course you did, because it's too tempting to eat the crust as well, mate, isn't it?
Well, that is being greedy, eating the crust, isn't it? But no, they're actually a good make and a good pasty, Ginsters.
Very good commercial plug. Great to talk to you, mate.
Cheers, Clem. Thanks very much.
Elsewhere in Sky Bet League One, Wigan Athletic's third win in four saw them bypass Plymouth Argyle to go top. Despite their impressive home form, Sunderland lost twice again on their travels, shipping eight goals along the way. And with just one win all season to their name, bottom club Crewe Alexandra are 6 points from safety. Meanwhile, in Sky Bet League Two, Dave Challoner swapped Hartlepool United to return to the National League with Stockport County. He only signed a three-year contract in the northeast in September. He leaves Hartlepool in seventh. There was also a managerial change at the other end of the table, as bottom club Scunthorpe United finally parted company with local boy Neil Cox after a run of just two wins in 25. And despite inheriting another one of the teams propping up the table, the new Carlisle United manager Keith Millen says he doesn't want to hear talk of relegation. As all the Sky Bet League One and League Two clubs head off into FA Cup action this weekend, that's it for this episode. A big thank you to Ryan Lowe, Mark Halsey and Michael Brown. If you've enjoyed it, please do give us a 5-star rating, press the subscribe button and share on your socials. If you'd like to get in touch, our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. My name's Mark Clement. Thanks very much for listening. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.